I think we should start with our meeting. People have been here from 10:30. Welcome, honorable members. Welcome, MSC. Are there any apologies? No apologies. Because of the number of people in this room, I think if we can say we should introduce ourselves individually, it might take 30 minutes. So we won't be doing that, but we'll just request that head of delegations should introduce themselves as they present. But I will then afford an opportunity to members to introduce themselves so that you know who are members present here, and also acknowledge the presence of the MEC from Eastern Cape, Minister Sicelo Ngobana. Ngobana. Okay. Okay, you're welcome, sir. And also request that before I get to the agenda, let me just first allow members to introduce themselves. I'm Peace Mabi, I'm from Gauteng province, and I'm a chair for this committee.
From the Eastern Cape, responsible for the portfolio of health and youth.
Thank you, Chair. Morning, everybody. I'm Nolthando Kekani from the Eastern Cape, the member of this. I'm the member of this committee.
Thanks, Chair, and welcome, everyone. My name is Daryl Worth. I'm a member of this select committee, and I'm from the Free State province.
We're expecting Honorable Mokoro. Hopefully, you'll be joining us soon, and Honorable Makunyane. Those are the standing members of this committee. Can I then request the research unit to introduce themselves?
Good morning. I'm Jennifer Thorpe. I'm the researcher for this committee.
Morning, I'm Daphne Matthews, Research Committee.
Okay, thank you very much. Department of Justice.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. I'm Ushara Siupol, Deputy Chief State Law Advisor from the Department of Justice in the Unit Constitutional Development and Human Rights.
All right. The rest, we won't be introducing ourselves. Is there any representative from Mpumalanga? They haven't arrived yet. Yeah, it's only Mpumalanga that's supposed to be here. Okay. The agenda for today, we're having four items. The first item is briefing by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development on the establishment of the hate crime task team. The second item is briefing by the department, by the Eastern Cape Provincial Department of Health on circumcision deaths in the province. The third item is briefing by the Mpumalanga Provincial Department of Health on circumcision deaths in the province. And the fourth item, which is the last item, and that will only take place if members are here. We need a quorum for that. It's consideration and adoption of minutes, then we can excuse the rest of the people who are in this room. I'm going to humbly request that we first allow the MEC to give us a briefing on the Eastern Cape Provincial Department of Health on circumcision deaths in the province. He has earlier on requested that he please be afforded an opportunity to present first, because he has a commitment and he needs to travel back to the province. MEC, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members of the Committee. Also, thank you very much, Department of Justice, for your understanding. Chairperson, I need to indicate that before 2012, when I was an executive member of Local Government and Traditional Affairs, we were responsible for monitoring the issue of initiation in the province, and we were a lead department amongst all departments that are affected. The reason being that in the definition in the province, we agreed that issues of tradition and custom belong to local government because it's attached to the house of traditional leaders and traditional leaders themselves. So the development and the customization of the ritual belongs to that area. So when we started experiencing death, the Executive Council, under the stewardship of the Premier, set up a cabinet committee headed by local government MEC, which was at that time myself, consisting of Department of Education, Social Development, Department of Sport, Arts and Culture, and so on. So we had a team, both politically and technically. We were then able to monitor the issue of the initiation up until a stage where there was completely not a single death in the affected regions where this is common, in this case in OR Tambo. So we would like, therefore, to quickly take you through the presentation that we have made available to you. So we are now a supporting department as health. The main department is local government. We will explain why we are supporting as health. The Department of Health, through the conditional grant of the financial year 2013-14, does not have specific budget for traditional circumstances, but for MMC. And the MMC budget is 20 million and extended, therefore, to support traditional circumcision, because in the province, it's only the area of Port Elizabeth and some few small sub-districts where the issue of MMC is being practiced. Generally, across the province, is traditional circumcision. So the following objectives are what makes us to be involved as Department of Health: to enhance and strengthen traditional circumcision, to support HIV prevention through the circumcision strategy, promotion of safety of initiates, curb and manage circumcision-related complications and death, in other words, injuries. The Eastern Cape Department has established a team comprising of those representatives from Department of House of Traditional Leaders, Local Government, Health, and local circumcision forum that we have created in all the sub-districts, especially where there is this particular death of young boys. And the role of the team is to visit all districts before the season to lay the foundation and prepare the ground for the initiation period so that it doesn't have a serious complication. And therefore, they met to consider the winter season, which was the issue of June, July. But as they were setting the date of the 17th, it became very clear that some other people, in an illegal fashion, decided to go on as if they were preempting the 17th date, which was the starting date for the team that was established to start the issue of the initiation. Now, Department of Health, therefore, supported the functioning of the team and designated medical officers to lay this foundation. We then provided accommodation for all that team and all those things that are listed there. And the support is also listed in the form of vehicles, in the form of accommodation, in the form of lunch bags and so on, to those teams with a view to ensure, therefore, that every situation is attended to. And I will not bore you with all those issues of the cars and who else was involved. Now, we thought that it is necessary that we sketch this particular matter as far back as 2006, so that you are able to compare the periods by which we experienced some problems in terms of hospital admissions, in terms of amputations, in terms of initiate death, the legal initiates and the legal initiates, and in circumstances where we felt that the act has been broken by whoever was doing any activity outside the provisions of the law. Now, I'm referring to the Lord, Honorable Chairperson, because when the Eastern Cape realized that there is no regulation that governs the issue of initiation or circumcision in the province by local government in this particular case. So the Department of Health developed a policy which later became a law by the legislature. So there is a law that says no boy would enter the initiation below 18 years. And equally, nobody would even contemplate to go to Ipuma without having been examined by medical officers. And because we had our own errors in the monitoring of whether or not these boys are healthy before they undertake this, it became very fashionable for even nurses to issue certificate certifying that no, you can go on without proper examination of the health of the individual. And as a consequence of that, when the boy is there and some other complications come up, for an example, it is not alerting the traditional surgeon that this particular boy, the resistance of his body to this or that must be monitored because of the following reasons, as enunciated either by a doctor or nurse in the letter that clears or notices the traditional surgeon. And it's just a letter that says, no, you can go undergo this ritual. And it doesn't spell out whether you are hypertension, whether you are diabetic, so that you are not subjected to the scrutiny of all the conditions that every other person is subjected to in the bush. So everybody is just treated the same. And as a consequence of which, when one wants to drink water, and by the time they are not allowed within a particular period, then this particular one, because of the condition of his body, wants to drink water, is not allowed. And instead, if he continues to press for more water, he will be beaten by those who are monitoring his condition. So these are some of the conditions that the witnesses that we picked it up from the point of view of health, that instead of medical officers, it's everybody in the clinic or health facility who issued this certificate. We thought also that in accordance with our district, we should give you a picture of where are these legal schools, legal initiates, illegal schools and illegal initiates, the admissions to hospitals, how many, the amputations of penis, and the number of deaths per district, so that you also have a picture of which district is more troubled by this particular instance. That's just a graph which indicates that OR Tambo is topical, followed by Alfrenzo in this particular case. And then this other slide shows you between the illegal and the legal, which is more dominant. Now, with respect to injuries, we also want to draw the attention of the committee that I think as we are going to approach the next slide, you will see that people are beaten. In some cases, not so much about they have done something wrong. In some cases, we suspect that there are grudges, local grudges, that are taking place. But because there is no proper monitoring by traditional leaders of who is supposed to be a traditional surgeon and who is supposed to be somebody who must look after these boys there, Now, everybody wants to be everything. And as a result, that if I happen to have some crutches with you in the locality, I will express it there when we are in this trouble. And therefore, many of the initiates were therefore beaten up, jumbled, either for saying I'm hungry or I need water, and then somebody just picked up a jumbled and then deal with the initiate. In the other cases, dehydration. People are denied water and any other liquid. And in other cases, sepsis, in other words, the infections and gangrenes, mutilations, and only three initiate died in hospital. Because what happens is that when therefore the complications are starting to show their ugly heads in the field, people quickly take people even without any procedure which is allowed in hospital, take people to hospital for admission, and the targets of those hospitals is Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital and St. Barnabas. And other patients or initiates die on admission in hospital because they are kept for too long without quickly drawing the attention of our medical officers in those cases. We have reported this. I've forgotten to include that in the initial stages, the premier ordered that the police must be part of the team that I was earlier citing. And therefore, as we go around, we report some of these cases and the police are following up. But they experienced a difficulty in that they were not familiar with the legislation created by the province. And therefore find it difficult to open up cases specifically charging those individuals until such time that we took them through that legislation whilst local government is still developing a policy as a custodian department that deals with this matter. So you will also see the extent of the assaults in this slide where we felt that we must show you how much damage is done to these initiates just by assaulting them. It was our intention not to show the extent of that particular man. The other phenomenon, which is new and which violates the current legislation, when I visited St. Barnabas Hospital and Nelson Mandela, in almost all the boys that have interviewed there, the lowest age is 13, and they don't go beyond 16. I interviewed each one of them. I'm 13 years, I'm 14 years old. Now, all those years, they are not supposed to be at that stage, even in terms of our own tradition. That then tells you, when you interview them, but why did you decide to do this? The problem is that we have a peer pressure at school. There are those that have gone through and who are laughing at us and are giving more pressure to us. And therefore, when we come out of school, we don't even ask permission from our parents. We just look for somebody whom we are told was responsible for taking other boys to men, and we ask him in the street to do it to us. So parents sit a week without knowing where their kids are. And what happens normally is that because the person sometimes is not trained, and when he realizes that blood is coming up in a terrible way, he picks up any wire or a piece of cloth and in an attempt to stop the bleeding, without understanding that once you tighten that, you are now stopping the blood flow to all the body that is affected. And the end result is that the front part of the penis would just fall apart because there is no blood supply that goes to any part of the penis. And they don't understand biologically that it is injuring the future of that boy. And worse, most is that we are doing that illegally. Nobody knows, neither the parents are aware that this boy is undertaking this particular. So it's therefore necessary that we share with you those kind of things. Others, mutilation of the scrotum sac, others tight dressing, as I've already said, others are denied water, incomplete initiation, removal of only the bottom part of the foreskin, assaults, as I've already indicated. Now, the custom in the Eastern Cape, we've come to one conclusion that it has been hijacked by criminals and it has been commercialized, because all these boys, because they are not permitted at home by parents, and those traditional imunibis demand money. In the instance where the boys don't have that money because they just came out of school, they hand over their cell phones as a replacement of money, and so on. And the highest price which is being called for each boy, they range depending on the traditional surgeons, but the highest is 3,000 that had to be popped out before you become or go to the bush. And that the boys are circumcised using unsterilized equipment, as we shall show you in the presentation. And the so-called traditional surgeons, they perform procedures under the influence of liquor themselves. So this is the kind of thing. And boys, they walk long distances after those kind of things. So these are the knives we have decided to show this August committee. And you could see, therefore, these are the knives that are not suitable to be used for this particular occasion. Zioka, Pinjezi, Zotsut, and Nezenyama, Jema Sequin, that you could use. That is what we have found in the Eastern Cape when we are following on all these issues. Now, because all our hospitals were full by sick people, now we have had to improvise to accommodate the initiatives that we have been admitted, to create some other shelters even behind, at the back of our hospitals. And in one instance, in St. Barnabas, we have had to relocate psychiatric patients and distribute them across the psychiatric institution in the province, because we were not complying in the first place in St. Barnabas with the national standard, norms and standards. So we were therefore renovating. But as we were beginning that, then there was this flood of initiates to be admitted. So we have had to create space for that. And we are therefore saying that this has therefore created a lot of problems for health in the Eastern Cape, as we have shown that in that particular slide. These are just the beds where we were to accommodate them. It's not necessary. And we were also saying that this inconveniencing our medical officers and our health staff, precisely because all the procedures in our health facilities are not being followed in terms of admitting us, and also created a burden on our meager resources that we have, because we did not plan for an influx of initiates who would be admitted in our hospital, and therefore using our budget intended for our patients and to take charge of this situation. The challenge is this mass casualties and admissions created, as I've already said. The staff is under stress because shortage of staff, and now find itself having to extend its services to these unplanned situations that we find ourselves. The issue of bed occupancy is an issue that is coming very strong on ourselves as health. So we are therefore saying that there is no way that we must not be involved now, because it creates a problem for us to watch and hope that local government will take charge of this matter. We are now in the forefront in assisting local government to ensure that we are able to reduce this burden that is now confronting health outside our resources. So we are equally saying that there is high criminal element that is taking place. Now, as a way forward, we are strengthening those teams I've alluded to in the first place. But we felt that the traditional leadership is not taking this matter serious. In fact, we have said in the province, in the workshop where we have assembled everybody, that we have a sense that traditional leaders have been overwhelmed by this practice. And there is a need, therefore, to conduct a civic education, especially in the Oar Tambo and Alfenso district. And thirdly, we are talking now with kings of the affected districts, as well as traditional leaders, in this case in Oar Tambo, that for health to be able to help, this particular matter must be centralized. In this sense that the kings must identify a place where all the boys that are to undergo initiation in that district must be kept, so that in the eighth day of their initiation, our daughters that we are currently training to understand this particular matter can then go on the eighth day there in the field to go and monitor if they are still in the good condition and advise the traditional surgeon accordingly. Because if they are scattered all over the show, in the interest of families, our doctors will be overstretched and we will not be in a position to assist and prevent a death in good time. So we are discussing with them and traditional leaders are considering our proposals, but in the meantime they are considering our proposal. We are training our doctors. We have trained three times a set of doctors and medical officers and nurses in the Nelson Mandela Academic Hospital, so that when the season of December comes, our doctors are ready to visit those initiates in the areas where the kings shall have identified in those particular areas. Equally, we are also saying that we must intensify the training of English so that at least they understand, and that we should not allow people who are not trained to undergo this particular ritual. And thirdly, that the South African Police Service must create teams in the districts where the initiation is taking place to monitor all the criminal elements that are interfering with this kind of thing. And equally, that the size of the IPOMA should be such that people are not congested, such that each one is able to share whatever disease that person has got easily with the next door one. So it should have space such that people are able to be attended to accordingly. So we thought, in the main, depending on the issues of questions, that is the kind of presentation we would like this AUCAS committee to have. But thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable MEC, and we welcome the presentation. Welcome, Honorable Mokgoro. maybe I should then first allow members to ask questions before I come in. Honorable members, Honorable Kutane.
Thank you, Chairperson. Welcome the presentation by the MEC of the Eastern Cape, fruitful and understandable. As I'm looking at the steps for 2014 to 2018, I don't know whether the MEC was there by that time, but I want to know what happened in 2006, because I don't see any arrests according to the state, but there are about 3,470 illegal initiates. I mean 285 illegal initiates. So I don't see any arrests. And also, I see the number was very high in June 2013. 2,314 and 19 arrests. also I want to know, if those people have been arrested, what is the sentence in the court? What is the sentence? Because we want to know, because I think those people are criminals, as MEC said, and they are intending to kill. So what is the sentence in the court? I also see about on page about this assault, it's so bad when I can see in the picture. Those people are intending to kill our young ones. So I'm so interested about the real descendants. I'm so interested because they are like, they want to kill. And about this age of 14 years, 13 years, as MEC indicated, is there any workshop in the communities to say that these are the young boys? Maybe they have been pushed by the others. So what is the remedy of this? Because this thing is continuing. It's not stopped. It's still continuing. Every December or June, the parents are so scared because they will find their children in those bushes being initiated by these illegal initiators. Again, these criminal elements in the currency, the knives, yes. It's so terrible, I don't know. But I don't know. I'm not a man, I don't know. Maybe they use these things. But according to me, it's not right. Thank you, Chair. I think I'm fine.
Another one, Paul?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And I'm sorry. Sir, I haven't been following the presentation, but my reaction really comes from the pictures I'm looking at here. I think it's page 13, if you can all look at the thing. I see pictures of people who are injured and still the people. I want to know, are these pictures of the initiation, and they get all these injuries during the time of initiation? And on page 16, I see long knife. Is that the instrument that is being used for this type of operation? So I would like really to know what does the community say? What does the parents of this initiative say when such brutal things happen? How can really a human being be subjected under this? What does the community say, what the parents say, and what does the community say? Thank you.
And what
does
the national government say?
And what is the national government saying? But I'm sure this would be a provisional matter. Because this thing is not a national issue. And severely so in the Eastern Cape.
But the national government does the same.
Yeah, what does the national government say? Now here I'm not sure that we're dealing with the national government. Are they people from national government?
Mr. Court, the message was
all right, I take your point, Chair.
Are you done?
I'm done.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just looking at some of the figures here. For example, initiation statistics for June 2013. I mean, there's 358 hospital admissions, 24 amputations, 40 deaths, and there were only 19 arrests. Now, I see there are a lot of illegal initiates. Now, obviously, these are, I take it the person performing those rights were a lot of them are illegal. What is done to curb the illegal procedures that are carried out? How are you going about that to make sure that it's done on a legal basis and that the circumcision equipment is clean and hygienically applied, and that the people, as you say, are examined before they go to make sure that they can cope with it? What is being done further with regard to that? Thank you.
Yeah. Another question that comes into my mind, I just...
I just kept it from the presentation of the MEC that they train these people. My question would be, what type of training are these people given? And how long does it take? And I heard him referring to them as doctors. I know to train a doctor, you take something like 6 years, including internship. I would like to know the duration of their training, how long it is, and how, what type of training are they giving. Thank you.
Thank you, honorable members. MEC, we thank you very much for personally coming and not telling the DG or any other representative from your office. It shows that you really take these issues very seriously. But I'm worried because of the committee visited the province in 2011, and some of the key issues that we have raised is that we felt that, that you needed a concerted effort to make sure that you bring all the departments on board, Department of Police, Department of Social Development, Department of Education, and of course Health. But we're only hearing that there's a recommendation on your presentation, of which I'm very worried about, if that is not happening already. And your presentation also is more of reactionary. You don't have systems in place to make sure that you attend to this problem. You know that it's an annual event. Whether you like it or not, every year you will have such incidents. I'm worried, again, if you're saying that as health you're not prepared for admissions, you just get a number, and as a result it taps on your budget. But you know that this is something that will happen every year. Even this year, we still are waiting for the report. It normally happens after June holidays, no? Is it June holidays?
During winter.
During winter. So this year again, we still have reports. So I'm worried about that. You are more reactionary than trying to cap the problem or being preventative towards this problem. I'm saying that because of we visited the province in 2011. We sat down and we highlighted all the challenging issues, all the challenges, and we've agreed on a program and as a way forward as to how we're going to deal with this issue. But it seems like we're still going to have problems. It doesn't look like these problems will be solved sooner than we had expected. There's 20 million that has been allocated for the 2013-2014 to the Member of Mayoral Committee. Budget that has been allocated specifically for this issue, and it was allocated for intervention and for interventions for traditional circumcision. So I don't know if you do have the breakdown or the breakdown that you see that from part of the 20 million from the MMC's allocation for 20 million. We would also want to know how that money has been spent so far. And then if that money has been accounted for, has been audited and all that. We also raised an issue regarding to the incorporation of traditional leaders. You only saying you have just considered doing that now, because without traditional leaders in those areas, there's no way that you'll operate. So we insist that you please take them on board, you inform them, you allow them to take lead and take part on this. Honorable Tutani raised an important issue to say that your steps are silent in terms of people who have been arrested. How many arrests have been conducted? Is there anyone who's been charged so far? In addition to that, you've also in your presentation said that the nurses are also irresponsibly signing or issuing certificates or letters without proper examining or observing the health of the and the fitness of these boys. So has there been any charges? Has anyone taken responsibility for those nurses who are irresponsibly discharging their duties without following the proper procedures? Your stats again, MEC, should clearly show from where and where exactly you are experiencing death. Is it because of the illegal process of initiation, or is it because of the beating, the assault that these boys come across? And which part, where is it? Do we get most deaths in the illegal initiation schools or the illegal ones? The stats also should also be clear on that one, because of your stats are just broad, you know, they are not specific in terms of exactly where are we experiencing and what is the main cause of death. Because of your presentation here is simply saying assault, you know, the pictures are talking to assault. It's nothing related to circumcision. So we need to be clarified on that as well. The issue of education and awareness. Are we talking to our people? In our local government meetings, in our MBZOs, in our IDP, this is an issue that needs to be that needs to be discussed. You know, we need to engage our communities on this. It's a crisis. People should be told. They should know which schools are legal, which schools are illegal. You should even go an extra mile of helping them to advertise, you know, issuing out pamphlets at schools, in community meetings. You know, as much as we can, we need to talk to people, to our people. Because if they don't know, people will just go. Boys will just, after school, decide that, no, we also feel that we are ready, we need to go. And continuously do the wrong thing. But the issue of arrest, we can't be having 200 and what was the somewhere where you are talking about numbers 200 and initiation says 2006. Yeah, we can't be having illegal initiate schools 285. Is it in an area? Is it in one area or is it across the province? Across the province. Okay. But then to date, we don't know. It's not updated. Illegal 224 or illegal initiates 1,120, and then schools 224. It's a lot. It's a lot. You know, from 2006 to date, let's see what was happening in 2006. 2006, it was 285. Can somebody help with math? It means you are only able to do what to reduce.
61.
How many? 40.
61.
If they are at 222 today, and 2006 they were at 285. That means. How many? 62. 63. Yo, it's a drop, you know.
No, I was there.
I can't believe you're more good in calculations than myself. But I'm saying, you know, on a serious note, it means you haven't been able to make inroads. And these are the only illegal schools that you know of. What about the ones that you know of that are operating behind your back? So I'm saying, really, you need to work hard on this one. It's 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, 6 years or 7 years later, you are still having, you did not even make half of it. And you know about these schools, but what are you doing about them? I will then pause for now and give you an opportunity to respond. If there are any other issues that members would note as you respond, I will then allow them for a last round so that we then afford the Department of Justice to present. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Yes, in the introduction, I indicated that before 2012, when we realized that we were experiencing death, even though it was very low at that time, the Executive Council in the province took a decision to put together a political committee headed by MEC for local government. We also included chairperson of the House of Traditional Leaders and his deputy in the committee of MECs. The Premier further indicated to us that we must also establish a multi-technical committee that will implement our political decision on behalf of Cabinet in relation to this particular aspect. I think I agree with you, Chair, that even though that committee was established, it's not as functional as is expected of it. Because currently, those who are amputated, as covered in the report, are not receiving counseling, some of them, which ought to have been conducted by social development, which is part of that committee. Because the committee is erratic in the way it sits and analyzes the situation and put preventative measures. And you see, as I was saying, from the initial stage where we were expected to report to Cabinet on an occasional basis, we managed, together with the House of Traditional Leaders and all traditional leaders in the province, to have a zero death during a particular period. And we then said, because we set up committee up to a village level, and then we agreed that all representatives of various nations that are sitting in the house must form part of committees that are monitoring whether preparations are in advance in all the districts to pave the way for the initiation period, and who is going to be a traditional surgeon in each case, and with whom is that traditional surgeon going to work with? Would they need medical officers from hospitals and clinics to assist them? So we had very strong systematic arrangement in place at the time. And I think because we people were, for a lack of a better word, rejoicing about being in control of the situation, they then relaxed the way in which we were dealing with the matter. And then, therefore, we could not meet, and so the House of Traditionalists was then taking the lead, realizing that therefore that it's a matter that directly affects them. So I'm therefore saying that I think the laxity that followed the setting up of the multidisciplinary structures is to a certain extent impacted on our ability to control and contain the situation. With respect to the arrests of 2006, I would be misleading this committee if I know why people have not been arrested in 2006. The Honorable Member will remember that at that time, I was still a chief whip or a deputy chief whip of the agency. I was not linked to government. So I wouldn't know why people were not arrested. It could be that at the time the health was not already piloted in legislation. And therefore it was then difficult to say who is wrong and so on and so on. Or it could be that even currently there is this thing of saying, where does this belong? Is it a health matter or is it a local government matter? So we always become so hesitant to take the lead, because from the health point of view, our understanding is that it belongs to local government where customs and traditions are located. And therefore we provide support because we are interested in reducing possibilities of HIV and AIDS. And we are therefore supportive of local government in its effort to ensure that people are circumcised to reduce that possibility. And now when local government is not hands-on on the matter, it impacts heavily on health, precisely because one way or the other, we have got to ensure, therefore, that we must prevent people from dying. So I'm therefore saying, Honorable Chair, plead with the committee that if I'm not able to answer in full the arrests, why there are no arrests in 2006, it's precisely because I have no information why people were not arrested at that time. The 2013 illegal versus arrest figures. I think at the time I was making this presentation, I indicated that the police are always finding it difficult for example, when I was in Amthatha, I requested that one of the highly placed policemen must be present in the meeting. And they came and I asked, why are you not arresting so-and-so and so-and-so? They said, the problem is that we don't know under which charge must we place this person. Must we charge this person for murder? Must we charge this person for this? We are in a dilemma. Now, that then creates a problem.
When a person takes a weapon or whatever and beat another person at the very same school, why should there be by means of taking an incident and using your own strength, inflicting injuries to a person to a point where that person dies? Why should there be no question mark, ambiguity? Why? Because in terms of the law, that is the matter.
Now, it's as if you were part of that meeting where we were confronting the police, but the police had an answer. The police are saying, in terms of their procedure, Honorable Chair, someone must lay a charge for them to pursue a case. And in this particular case, these young boys that are assaulted are afraid even to identify who that person was doing. I have asked them
personally, the initiate. Who did this to you? I don't know the name. It's a certain clan name. Now imagine you want the policeman to go and look for this man. And the person who has suffered can't remember other than knowing that you are Changisa, your clan name. And how many Changisas in the village? Others in the initiate, I have interrogated. They say, no, we are afraid to tell because he has threatened us with death. So they refuse, frankly. Even their parents, they refuse to disclose who was doing this illegal thing to their child without a permission. And the police are then saying, now, if we arrest, who is going to testify in court? Realizing the difficulty, so to speak, something that we found that the police are just hiding behind this. What we did, I set up a special team of 4 people from the department, and I said, you are not going to go back to Bishop. I want you to sit quietly with these patients. Maybe psychologically this thing is affecting them. To find a way of sitting with them and extract from them the individuals who did this. And they brought this. That's why you have at one stage about 19 or so arrests. It arose as a result of setting up that team to interrogate in both hospitals all these initiates to find out who was doing this kind of thing. And one fellow in one of the St. Barnabas Hospital, the doctors were saying to me, there is no possibility that you would be in a position to walk. Just on beatings, the leg is so damaged that that particular young boy will not be able to use that particular leg in future. And but the doctors were saying, we are doing our best, anything to save him. I'm not talking about undergoing initiation, just beatings, the leg. So I'm saying, therefore, we are then saying to the police, look, this is an attempted murder if you don't know the charge. We are telling you this is an attempted murder because if this person was, suppose that the doctors are telling us therefore that this person is not going to live longer. And that tells you that the person has been murdered. Now you are being told who that person, go to the village and check for this one who has caused this boy who is about to lose his leg. So we are now trying to make it a point. I mean, earlier on you were asking what the national government, our minister, Dr. Mtswaledi, is discussing with Minister Nathi Mthethwa about setting up task team or task forces within the SARS in all these provinces where the issue of initiation is being undertaken. And Dr. Mtswaledi has sent even some team of doctors to reinforce what the province is doing to curb the escalation of this death. And he has also spoken to some other NGOs to go and assist us in terms of trying to, because if you go to Mizana, some of the illegal initiatives, you don't even see them where they are. Now what you will see is patients who are admitted in hospital. And when those traditional surgeons arrive and realize that they have been taken to hospital, and they visit them in hospital and beat them. In one instance, our nurse had to be admitted in a hospital in KZN, precisely because he's treating them there in hospital. So this is a demonstration of the escalation of the criminal element that has invaded this strategy. Quickly, on the issue of the court sentence, they are still in court. They are not yet judgments at the moment. Those reflected in the report. We have not had any outcome of the court as of now. And then the public education. We have tried to go around even in schools, and we are of the view that we must intensify. That's why we have established these kind of teams. We must intensify public education, Honourable Chair, as we have indicated. And we are of the view that because in the Pondolet area, I think today is just a mere issue of circumcision. The next time you will hear about situations that are confronting that area, it's going to be a ugutwalo of the little girls and the level of teenage pregnancy. Now, so you have a situation that is supposed to be community driven if you want to cap it. The problem is that parents are just watching. They are not playing any role in determining what should happen to their children. And therefore, these churches find an opportunity to hijack this particular situation and exploit it the way they want to exploit it. And now it's beginning to lose value in terms of how it is being conducted. Hence, Honorable Chair, you were talking about why are we not involved in traditional leaders? They are at the forefront in the Eastern Cape. But the difficulty is, at a local level, some of them don't want to be unpopular about stopping these practices. They just allow this kind of thing. So we are then saying, no, even if there are these challenges in the castle, let's ensure that at the center of all our activities should be the traditional leaders who must spearhead this. So you are correct when you were talking about those kind of things. It is also our view that we must continue to ensure that. We are also contemplating using teachers in terms of, because sometimes in some other schools, teachers are knowledgeable about who wants to be initiated. So we were then saying, let's also interact with teachers to get lists of boys who have indicated if they know. And then the traditional leader must then control that list so that you will then cap the illegal processes and ensure that traditional leaders are able to control and then take all those who want to be initiated and then be put under one central point in that way. The issues of assault or the issues of knives, it's happening especially on the illegal part of it. And especially people who have not been trained don't even know what this is all about. But they're very opportunistic in the way they do this thing. So that's why they are using any knife they come across. They have no clue as to what instrument is used and why that instrument is chosen in the manner in which the old people of a particular tribe are choosing that particular. They have no clue about that. They just think that any knife is suitable to cut any object. And hence they go there, this kind of thing. Injuries, these are indeed people who are initiates that are injured in this way. Sometimes in the majority of cases is when they demand, for an example, if they are mixed with some of them who got into the bowman earlier, and when they realize that why others are eating and I'm not allowed to eat, and if they demand that I'm hungry, then they begin to jambok. And in majority of cases, those who are jamboking are under influence of liquor. They don't even realize that they are damaging the life of the young boy, precisely because they do all those things under the influence of liquor. And at times, because they need that money, they take that money and go and buy brandy. And whilst watching these boys, he's under the influence of liquor. Precisely because there is nobody, there is not even a parent who go and see if the child is there. In our Tambo, all these illegal ones are not in the bush. They are somewhere here in the township. in a village, they take somebody's house and use it as that bomb. Within, you know, most that people who undergo that are isolated there in the bush, away from other people and so on, other women. But no, when it is illegal and people are coming out from school, they just grab them, and if there is one rendezvous empty, they put them there. Nobody knows, and then it goes. Nobody attends to them, dehydration, the order of the day, and result, in the last period of their life, they approach to the hospital at the late hour. That's why, even if it is legal and illegal, we experience death precisely because of dehydration and other various deaths. They keep them too long, even in legal cases. They keep them too long when they realize that it is experiencing some difficulty, instead of drawing the attention of the medical officer in time, so that they can then be attended to quickly. I've responded to issues of mine. Yes, issues of... some parents are involved, some parents are afraid to be involved. And in the majority of cases, Honorable Chair, there are parents, there are houses that are headed by women. In instances where the husband has passed away a long time ago. And these people that are conducting this and butchering these young boys are capitalizing on some of those instances in the Pondalay. Where is the provincial government? The provincial government is involved. The health premier has taken a keen interest in ensuring that we drive this and we prevent this. I've demonstrated the involvement of the national minister, and now lately the traditional department of Kota is also coming into the picture now. The illegal procedures are conducted by these people who want to commercialize it. That's why they have no respect for this. Instruments, they are not clean. You have seen in the presentation. There is no time for them to think about what type of instrument must be used here for the health of this initiative. The issue of death, the remedy in our view, is the program that I've highlighted. I think I agree with the chair. It's partly reactive. Precisely because of in instances where we have not rolled out a plan in anticipation of the coming system, we found ourselves having to react when we are shocked by the sudden increasing of death. But in instances where we have got a thorough plan that we have laid out, which is watertight, we don't experience this. And we are then saying we are targeting OR Tambo because it is in OR Tambo where this particular... We were even saying, Chair, maybe we should use OR Tambo to focus on the issue of, as is in KZN, the MMC, and perhaps allow a variation of traditional circumcision and MMC, medical circumcision, and not be blanket about the circumcision, because it's sub-district has got a different approach to this. And I think some of the traditional leaders are beginning to adopt the MMC approach rather than traditional circumcision. The government approach, yes, I've already spoken about that. I agree with the chair fully. I think we have tended to be reactionary in terms of how we are dealing with this particular matter. I think I equally agree that initially, we thought that local government should be the one that budget for this activity. And now that it is impacting heavily on us, there is no doubt that we have to find a mechanism to budget for it, because we are not going to escape the impact of this on ourselves. So I agree. I fully agree with you, Chair, that unless we put in place some mechanism to cap the use of our budget by ensuring that we plan and budget, it's going to be a problem. we will bring the give the put the select committee the breakdown of how much we have used on what and so on, because it started this year to use the 20 million big time. Was initially it was specifically for MNC, and we were then saying that because traditional leaders in the Eastern Cape don't want the MNC, we were trying to persuade them on the basis of the debt, but they were very strong. So as a result, we could not tap from this 20 million. We have had to use some money from the conditional grant on HIV and AIDS. But now we've spoken to the National Department of Health that maybe we should not separate the MMC and the traditional circumcision in instances where the practice is traditional. Maybe we should conflate the two, both in statistics as well as funding. It is on that basis, therefore, that National gave us 20 million this particular time. All the 19 cases of arrest are still in court, Honorable Chair. As soon as there is some judgment or outcomes, we will let the committee to know. Now, what we did, because we spotted a particular matter late this year of the certificate that willy-nilly issued, the current SG has been instructed to put mechanism in place in all our districts, that is secular to all our districts, that only medical officers, not nurses, must issue this certificate to initiate. So that then, in the event that we are able to spot that it was not a medical officer who issued this certificate, we are able to do what you have asked us. Why are we not charging? Are there any charges and so on? Because we have realized that we never anticipated that the loophole would be used willy-nilly the way things are now beginning. The statistics, death and illegal beatings, I think I agree. We will have to do the breakdown to clearly indicate the particular beatings arising from illegal or legal, and the particular death arising from illegal initiates or schools and legal, so that there is that distinction, so that we are able to monitor. Or the death are more from illegal or illegal initiates. Yes, the issue of education and awareness is what we have resolved together with traditional leaders, that all our teams that we are now already on the field must start by educating our people about the existence of illegal initiate, the impact and the dangers that is emerging from such issues, as well as the procedures that must be followed. And we are also convening a meeting of all traditional leaders, at least to again to spread this information amongst their communities in all other, but in platforms of government. This becomes a standing item in the Eastern Cape. Whether you talk about when municipalities are assembled in one point, this becomes a subject that is being discussed. Even in health, wherever we are talking about this particular matter, and we are condemning the way it is being distorted. Thank you very much.
Yes,
the question arises as to why these initiations take place at a particular period of the year, which to me it seems is winter. And as far as I'm concerned, life thrives more in summer than in winter. If you get an injury, an open injury, in winter it has the tendency of rotting. But if you get an injury in summer, it has the tendency of getting healed very soon. may indicate that life thrives more in summer than in winter. And then in this instance, that is now, the initiation, is there any reason that can be laid down to say we choose winter time because, and something that is favorable to the initiates? The second question, Chair, is the MEC has spoken about the illegal and the legal schools. One would like to know what are the differences, because in terms of the presentation, deaths occur from both schools. What would be the difference, legal and illegal schools?
Well, my recollection of the two seasons, is that our communities prefer winter than summer.
The question is why?
Because in their wisdom, they think that things are controllable in winter than in summer. In the sense that if, for an example, you have a wound, say for instance, you let me use bleeding for an example, if I will be able to explain it properly. Bleeding is not so profuse as happening in summer than in winter. And that there is a belief that healing is faster in winter than in summer. Whether that is scientific, the other thing is that your body temperature differs in winter than in summer. So that is why, therefore, people in their thinking, they prefer winter than summer to undergo this bike kind of thing. I don't want to explain it more than that. maybe for nurses to reinforce.
Yes, it's true that the sores are healed very fast in winter than in summer. There's a terminology in nursing that says that in summer, the source becomes, becomes septic in summer. So in winter, there's no sepsis anymore. But in winter, there's no sepsis, but in summer, there is a sepsis. You can approve that, and it's true. If you have got burns in winter, they recover very faster than the burns occurred in summer. That is.
Yes, I have mentioned that there are some few deaths in legal initiates or legal schools, so to speak, where some initiates were circumcised, compared with illegal. The difference is that in the legal schools, the situation is controllable, except that there is negligence in some instances, which leads to the death of the person. But in illegal...
What I want to know is what makes it legal.
The legality part of it is that it is approved by a family. Parents agree that our son is ready to go to manhood, and they set their processes in place, all their traditional processes leading up to the initiation of circumcision. But the illegal one, nobody knows who this traditional surgeon, where is the son circumcised, who looks for that, who provides food wherever the person is. And that complicates the situation. And as a consequence of that, in the illegal cases, you don't consider the age group that is required in terms of the law. Let alone they, then in some instances there is commonality in terms of, in both cases you do experience some death. So I've explained what has led to the death in a situation where they are legal. Yes, the legal ones.
So
the illegal ones are not registered.
The difference is that the legal ones are formalized. The illegal ones are not formalized. They are contracted.
Yeah, lastly, Honorable MC, we thank you very much, but we are saying that our children and our women are not protected. They still live in fear and harassment. Their dignity and basic human rights have been violated, and it seems as if there's no one who's prepared to bravely tackle this issue. And we don't want to hear this kind of report anymore. And as this committee, we're saying it stops right now. It stops this year. Next year, we're not going to hear the same anymore. And we are tired of these brutal activities that are taking place in that area. You know, if it is not Ukutwala, it is the second session. Enough is enough. We are saying that to this committee. And we are suspending all our activities of the committee until the end of the term. Our focus will be Eastern Cape. We'll be dealing with Ukutwala and the circumcision initiation schools until we get to the bottom of this, and this has been corrected. In our next meeting, which is the next quarter, we will invite the national police. We want your local police, the provincial police. We want the Department of Education. We want Department of Health. We want Department of Justice. We want the local government, the MMC, responsible for this program. We want the cooperative governance in a form of traditional leaders, the leader, the head of that province. We want that. Who else should be here? Education, I've mentioned. So we want all those people in this meeting. We're going to first talk about the issue of protecting the rights, the basic rights of single-headed women families and single-headed children families, their security. We want commitment from all the people that I've mentioned. And the second issue, we're going to talk about the initiation. We're going to talk about Ukutwala. If I was confident enough that you give me the response, I would say that you should, before you leave, give us the preparations, your state of readiness, processes that are in place in terms of next year. What is it that you have planned? But I'm not confident that you'll respond to that. Not now. I'm not confident that you'll give us that. But when you go back, that's the message that you need to tell them, that as they prepare in our next term, they will come in this committee, they must come and give us the state of readiness in terms of next year. What is it that they are doing? Systems that are in place to make sure that they monitor, they visit, they make sure that if there are no contracts or any legal thing that is happening, they deal away with it. So that's the message that this committee is sending back to your province, back to the clusters that are there. We don't want to be reactionary. You know, every time on TV, children are lying on bed instead of being at school, circumcision, Ukutwala. And we have capable leaders there. We have strong men like yourself there, but they're not doing anything about this. No, honestly, you know, it's a joke. We are laughing because it's not happening to our children. But once it can happen to your children, then that's when you can start being reactive and responsive towards this. So it cannot be because of its poor children of unknown families, therefore it's okay. No, it cannot be correct. Because of out of this, we people, children never go back to school. They drop out. What type of a nation are we building in this time of democracy when we are saying children must read, you know, must be able to go to, be given protection, go to school. If it means they must be policed, let it be so, you know. If it means police must walk them to school and back home, let it be so. Because again, we can't be a nation that budgets for health. You know, our budget health, it's very heavy. And these are things that we can avoid. So I'm saying we are suspending all our programs until the elections. We'll focus on Eastern Cape and make sure that we get to the bottom of this thing. I don't understand. Everybody's talking, they are criminals. Why are we not arresting these criminals? So we are saying, please, Honorable MEC, we thank you very much for your presence and responding to this invitation, especially not sending anybody, but making sure that you come here yourself and respond to this issue. But please go back to your, is it the MINMEC? To the EXCO report. Give this report to the Honorable Premier and say that in your intergovernmental relations meetings, we want you to also discuss, we want the state of readiness for next year. What is it that we are doing to make sure that this never happens again? Thank you very much. Have a safe journey home. We'll see you in, when is the next one? We'll see you in October. But the proper communication will be sent to your province. Thank you very much. Just 2 minutes break so that we then... Yeah, you must tell them that you are from with. Can we just have 2 minutes break so that we then allow the Department of Justice to come and give us their presentation? Mpumalanga, is it here? Is there anyone from Mpumalanga? Yeah, I just saw it now. I thought I would do that. Thank you. Can we settle? 2 minutes is over. I'm sorry, I will not allow visitors to come and disrupt our meeting. I said we are starting. If you still want to be part of this meeting, please get seated. Can we then go to the second item? What's my agenda now? Unfortunately, the Department of Mpumalanga is not here. Mpumalanga Provincial Department of Health. They are not here to come and brief us on their circumcision death in the province. It could have been very beneficial that they are here, so that we take decisions based on their presentations and also informed by what they were going to present to us. They are not here. They did not send anything, so we won't be discussing that. It's off the agenda. So we'll now allow the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development to brief us on the establishment of the hate crime task team. Now, with this one, we're having an issue about the... Triangle Project is also here. They're representing the... They are representing the civil society. So when we invited the Justice Department, the Justice forwarded some of the questions that they felt they were not relevant to them, but to Triangle. They felt that Triangle would be in the best position to actually respond to those questions. So now they are here, and then in terms of the rules of Parliament, whenever we're going to have someone to present before a committee, we have to first seek for permission. The second issue, that matter has to be 80 feet, and in this instance, the presentation is not 80 feet. There's no notice that the Triangle will be presenting. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, I would seek your intervention on this issue. Let's take a decision. We have, though, a right to give them an opportunity to present, of which later then we can report to the House Chair as to what transpired during this meeting, because they are here. It will be a fruitful exercise for them to be here, and then we don't allow them to present. But I would want to seek advice from Honourable Members on the issue.
Chair, seeing that they are here, I think let them do the presentation after that. Okay.
All right. They will do a presentation, and Nadia will have to write to the House Chair, informing him about what transpired. Okay.
Honourable Chair, I'm sorry, may I please be allowed an opportunity to just comment on that? Thank you for requesting that permission. I think it's going to be important to clarify what the purpose of inviting us to present was, and what it is the Select Committee would like Triangle Project to respond to, because there seems to be some uncertainty on that. And I think we would really value the opportunity to give input from civil society, but at the moment it's unclear whether we are giving input from civil society or whether there is a need for input from the task team. And I can't respond unless I know what the purpose of the initial request that was sent through to Triangle by the committee to present is.
Look, I don't want us to have a dialogue on that. I think earlier on we spoke about it. The committee has never invited you. Are we clear on that? It was forwarded by the Department of Justice to yourself.
Ma'am, you signed this letter. Yours sincerely, Honourable Steve Mabe. So I think it is important to be correct about the fact.
Okay, you respond on the questions that we have sent to you. Are you in a position to respond to those questions?
I am in a position to respond to those questions.
Good. Then stick to that. Can we then have your presentation?
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Thank you for the opportunity to brief the Select Committee on the work undertaken by the Department in respect of the National Task Team on gender-based and sexual orientation-based violence against LGBTI persons. Honorable Chair, in a letter dated 26 August 2013, addressed to the Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development, Honorable Jeffrey Radebe, and to the Director General, Nonkululeko Sindani, the Honorable Chairperson requested the Department of Justice to brief the committee on the brief on the establishment of the National Task Team, Chairperson, by the Minister of Justice in 2011, to brief the Select Committee on the meetings that this task team has held regarding LGBTI issues, dates of meetings, attendance and resolutions adopted, the development and overview of the draft strategic work plan for the task team for the period up to 1 April 2014, other strategies that possibly the task team is looking at which have been developed and implemented. The Select Committee also wanted to be briefed on the draft policy framework and or legislation on hate crimes, status of the bill, date for tabling the bill, overview on the category of crimes and sentencing, baseline research and situation analysis that was conducted on the mandate of the task team, and any other initiatives that the department is taking in relation to victims of hate crimes. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, we'll start with the background as to the establishment of the National Task Team. In 2011 March, the media had begun to report increasingly on incidences of sexual violence perpetrated mostly against black lesbian women. And I'm sure Honorable Members know that socially in the media as well as in many documents that were circulating that this crime was termed corrective rape and informally can be defined as sexual offense that is unlawfully committed by heterosexual men against lesbian women with the intent to correct the sexual orientation of lesbian women. Sometimes also in the past it's been referred to as curative rape simply because by virtue of the act it was intended to cure them of their sexual orientation. The National Task Team then took a decision at that time to move away from the term corrective rape simply because it does not exist on the statute book and to deal more broadly with violence against LGBTI persons. Insofar as the establishment of the task team, I just want to say it's not the hate crimes task team. It was called at that time in 2011 the Interim National Task Team on gender-based and sexual orientation-based violence against LGBTI. Hate crimes much broader relating to all crimes committed based on any one of the prohibited grounds in Section 9 of the Constitution, which would include race, persons with disability, etc. Minister was petitioned in 2011 by Luleki Sizwe, an NGO based in Cape Town, regarding the issue of violence against LGBTI persons. And in response, the minister then established this task team comprising of relevant government departments as well as civil society organizations. The main mandate was to explore ways of intervention to and develop a national intervention strategy to combat violence perpetrated against LGBTI persons. The Director General had advised that in discussing this, we should also then recognize very importantly that South Africa, insofar as rights are concerned, especially the human rights of every person living in South Africa, that South Africa has a very progressive constitution and in fact was the first state worldwide that placed sexual orientation under the protection of constitutional law. In particular, reference is made to Section 9 of our Constitution, which guarantees every citizen of South Africa a right to equal protection and benefit of the law, and expressly prohibits all forms of discrimination on the ground of sexual orientation. I must say, in terms of the Section 9, the legislature, as well as the executive, both have enhanced our national legislative framework in a number of ways to give meaning and breathe life into Section 9. And in the PowerPoint, you would see several examples of how, in particular in respect to sexual orientation, the national legislative framework has been enhanced to protect sexual orientation. And specific reference is made to, in 1998, South Africa took a stance and legislated against discrimination on sexual orientation in the work environment. In 1999, the same-sex couples began to receive a legislative recognition as de facto couples. The Domestic Violence Act, promulgated in 1999, endorses the right to legal protection of same-sex persons by classifying the same-sex relationship as a domestic relationship. In the year 2000, South Africa legislated against discrimination in the provision of goods and services, and this liberated gay men against social perceptions that restricted them from working in environments that exposed them to children. In 2000, the Equality Act, which we commonly refer to as PAPUDA, Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination, was promulgated. In 2002, another progressive step was taken by South African government when both joint and step adoption by same-sex couples legislation was adopted. In 2006, South Africa became the fifth country internationally and the first nation on the African continent to grant official recognition to same-sex marriages. In 2008, gay men and lesbian women began to serve openly in the military to stand for historical discrimination on sexual orientation that existed in the work environment. And very recently, over and above the fact that the South African government is a party to many of the international human rights treaties, in 2011, South Africa initiated a resolution in the UN Human Rights Council requesting the United Nations High Commission for Human Rights to draft a detailed report on the situation of LGBT citizens worldwide and to follow up on the implementation of the Vienna Declaration on Human Rights. So within this progressive framework, constitutional and legislative framework, the environment is there to ensure that all measures and steps are taken by government to enhance protection of LGBTI persons against violence. In respect of the task team itself and specifically the questions posed by the Select Committee, Honorable Chairperson, we've listed the number of meetings that were held by the task team. We've also provided to the committee the resolutions that were taken by the task team, and that's listed on the slide. There were approximately seven meetings. The last meeting of the national task team was on the 7th of July, 2012. June. One of the things that the National Task Team, when it was meeting, was that there was a need to further unpack the mandate and the terms of reference of the Task Team, especially in relation to its composition and what it was going to seek to do. So the National Task Team had then appointed a working group comprising of some of the key civil society organizations, as well as government departments, to review the terms of reference and operations of the National Task Team. The working group comprises the Departments of Justice and Constitutional Development, South African Police Service, Social Development, Correctional Services, the National Prosecuting Authority, the South African Human Rights Commission, the Commission for Gender Equality, and nominated members of civil society. At this point, Chair, I would like to just pause to say that the department acknowledges that there has been little progress that was made by the National Task Team up to early 2013. There are multiple reasons for this, including some tensions between actors, relevant role players, and lack of definition. But I'm, however, glad to report on behalf of the Minister and the Deputy Minister and the Director General that both our department and the relevant civil society organizations have learned from the challenges and have come to realize that we all need to collectively unite to get things done. In a very short period, Honorable Chairperson, we have managed to address the capacity constraints within the department in relation to this particular issue. The Director General has transferred the function of LGBTI to our branch, Constitutional Development, which was recently established by the Minister of Justice, with effect 2nd May 2013. And since 2nd May 2013, the department has met with civil society organizations in the working group on the following occasions: 11 to 12 June 2013, 26 June 2013, 2 August 2013, and 9 September 2013, all with the view to address all of the resolutions that is present before honorable members. And the department wishes to brief the select committee that the following issues were addressed in all of these meetings to date. We've revised the terms of reference for the National Task Team in an effort to address its operations and composition. We've developed a strategic work plan for 2013-14 on the following strategic areas: public education and communication, development of training materials, civil society alliance building, and case flow management regarding pending cases in the criminal justice system, especially in respect of violence committed against LGBTI persons. A national intervention strategy on gender and sexual orientation-based violence is in its final stages of development, as well as the situation analysis that the select committee wanted to be briefed on has also been completed. In respect of the overview of the activities planned, the first activity that civil society organizations and the departments in the working group have identified relates to strengthening CSO participation in the LGBTI group. The activities are spelled out there. An environmental scan will be conducted. A desktop review identifying relevant parallel structures that the NTT can coordinate or align its activities with. This is so that they can facilitate CSO alliance building. The intended outcomes are that the NTT is aware of parallel activities and structures that can assist in CSO alliance building. The second activity relates to the national Imbizo. A national Imbizo is envisaged with representatives from LGBTI CBOs per province. And the intended outcome is for a coordinated CSO response to gender and sexual orientation-based violence against LGBTI in its engagement with the NTT, an expanded list of CSOs participating in the NTT. I think this is one of the key issues that was raised in the previous NTT meetings, that the department had to ensure that organizations were fairly and adequately represented in the work of the task team. In order to get to the national Imbizo, colleagues also felt that it would be important to have regional workshops in all 9 provinces to ensure that we do get this fair and adequate representation. And our outcome would be to encourage a process of deeper reflection on the purpose and impact of coordinated responses in relation to the mandate of the NTT and addressing issues of accountability to the sector. The second result area is the development of training manuals, and this has been recognized as an important area for the attention of the national task team, simply because hate crimes is not covered on statute books. And so, similar to the presentation made by the MEC, I think that there would have to be this concerted effort in training the role plays in the criminal justice system. In other words, for example, if a crime is committed in the interim and we would need to provide some form of guidelines and assistance to role plays in order to screen cases to identify whether crimes have been committed on the basis of any motive, which is where the bias is hatred based on any one of the prohibited grounds listed in Section 9 of the Constitution. The third result area is an extremely important area. It's the monitoring of the LGBTI cases in the pending in the criminal justice system. And this is particularly important and I think forms the core of the work of the National Task Team, honorable members, because that is precisely the issue that was brought to the minister, that there have been these cases of violence, and the inquiry from civil society organizations was how was government going to deal with it. In this regard, a number of efforts have been made by the department and civil society organizations, and this relates to proposals for the establishment of a multi-sectoral rapid response team, the development of a case tracking system. Both of these have already started, and I'll report on that shortly. Underpinning all of these activities, it would be very important to have an external communication strategy to ensure that our stakeholders are informed of initiatives, but more broadly, to inform the public about the constitutional rights of everybody living in the country, as well as to ensure that in as much as we have rights, we have responsibilities, we have the right to be protected, and we have the responsibility to ensure that people are protected. So my colleague is here from communications, and I'm going to just skip the communication slide. She'll come back to that. I just want to take you to the pending cases in the criminal justice system, Chairperson. The working group established the rapid response team, and I think this has been one of the core developments of the task team, which is to track the cases, to provide progress reports on the pending cases in the criminal justice system, as well as to come up with a rapid response. So when a crime takes place at a particular area, that there will be mechanisms made available so that the case is reported to the appropriate authorities. And again, I think it becomes important simply because we don't have specific hate crime legislation. If you are reporting at a police station, you would need to particularly bring to the attention of the police officer that this crime has been committed. It's not simply just a murder, but it has aggravating factors because there's bias involved. The person was murdered because she was a black lesbian woman. And so we are looking at developing a sort of interim protocol to assist role players to deal with such matters. In respect of the pending cases, we've already identified the pending cases in the criminal justice system. The NPA and the South African police are in the process of tracking the cases. and providing progress reports to the task team. And we've already received feedback from the National Prosecuting Authority on certain of the matters. And the South African Police Service will be giving us feedback on the 23rd of September, whereafter we will be meeting with the police on the 25th to go through a screening process of the cases. Insofar as the draft legislation and policy framework on hate crimes that the Select Committee wanted to be briefed on, the department is developing a draft bill based on the policy framework which has already been finalized by the department. The draft bill will be developed based on a public participation process that the department intends embarking upon. The bill itself, in terms of the legislative program, we envisage that the bill will be tabled in 2014 following an intense consultation process in all 9 provinces on the draft policy framework. Insofar as the status of the draft policy framework, we have submitted it to Cabinet. We will be submitting it to Cabinet for approval to commence with the public participation process, and we will be working with the GCIS to hold the dialogues in collaboration with all of the provinces once Cabinet has given us the approval to go ahead with that. Regarding the baseline research study that the Select Committee requested information on, it is true that the former Deputy Minister Andre Knauss did mention last year, I think it was in December 2012, that a baseline research has been conducted. And it was conducted on the study looked at the perceptions of court officials on LGBTI persons, identification and registration of cases involving LGBTI witnesses, the statistical account of these cases, issues relating to secondary victimization, the causes of delays in the finalization of these cases. This research study was finalized in September 2012, and the study goes hand in hand with the development of a national intervention strategy, which is already underway, so as to ensure that the strategy will be responsive to the existing challenges that have been identified in the situation analysis. Both these documents are going to be presented to the minister. Thereafter, we will release it for comment, Chairperson, and consultation. Other interventions that the department has embarked upon to improve justice for victims of corrective rape and other hate crimes. Following the World Conference Against Racism held in 2001 on our South African shores in Durban, the department, the South African government, together with member states of the UN, adopted the Durban Declaration and Program of Action, and South Africa actually played a very phenomenal and progressive role in terms of calling upon member states to develop a national action plan to combat racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and related intolerance. The department has finalized this national action plan, and it is before Cabinet, with the request that Cabinet approve that the document be released for public consultation. Further to that, the Minister has a program in the Department of Justice on access to justice and promotion of constitutional rights, funded by the European Union and implemented by a civil society organization called Foundation for Human Rights. The core areas of focus under this program relate to advocacy programs, research and support to advice centers based in communities, and promotion of constitutional rights. The Director General very recently, last week actually, as chair of the Justice, Crime Prevention and Security Cluster, has requested that a process be put in place to determine if all the provincial development committees of the JCPS are dealing with LGBTI cases and to further prioritize these matters. Insofar as the National Task Team is concerned, we are convening the National Task Team next week on the 18th to 19th September, and we look forward to concretizing our recent efforts with civil society. I just want to pause for a minute, Chairperson, with your permission, to ask my colleague just to share with you what we've developed with GCIS on the communication strategy that we will present to the National Task Team next week.
Thank you, Chair. We, as my colleague has said, we have worked with the GCIS to put together a communication strategy. A communication strategy that will support the processes and all the activities that she has already presented on. And basically the strategy is will be rolled out under the theme LGBTI rights are human rights. And our central message in the strategy is that that which encourages tolerance highlights the constitutional right to equality and sexual orientation and demonstrates the commitment of the criminal justice system to deal with hate crimes. And in terms of the rollout of the strategy, we have the key main pillars, which are stakeholder engagement, outreach program, which basically will be more developmental communication, activation, and community sessions. We will also be engaging in some media activities, marketing, as well as internal communication amongst the government departments themselves. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. On behalf of the department, I just want to assure the committee that the department is committed to promoting and protecting the rights of LGBTI persons. LGBTI rights are human rights. And we want to assure the committee that following next week's National Task Team meeting, which we are looking forward to, that we will report back to the Select Committee on the work that we're doing, the progress we are making in terms of the work plan that we have prepared for adoption next week, if all goes well. And thank you again for the opportunity, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. And before we delve with questions, let's afford Triangle an opportunity to also respond on questions that were sent to them.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I thought we agreed during the debate that I will respect the committee. The committees need to have the presentation circulated ahead of time, and that I will not expect of them to be able to respond to something now that they didn't have a chance to peruse beforehand. So I would be very happy to have the chance to circulate that to the committee and to take up any further questions that there might be after that if there's a need for further input. So if that is acceptable, I would appreciate that opportunity. And unless there are particular questions that the committee feels would assist them in this discussion, then I'm happy to respond to that.
Do you have any presentation prepared?
Yes, I do.
Can you present?
Ma'am, I'm really uncertain of how this communication is unfolding.
Okay, that's fine. So you're not in a position of presenting?
I think I just explained to you quite clearly that I have a presentation prepared, but I know that the committee didn't have a chance to see it beforehand.
We are saying present. We are giving you an opportunity to present. That's not an issue at the moment. We are saying we're giving you this opportunity to present. Are you in a position to present or are you not? Do you have a presentation with you? Do you want to present or not?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a presentation with me. I'm going to decline your
okay,
request.
Okay. Yeah. Honourable, can we then continue? Question? Honourable what?
Thanks, Chair. Yes, one of the questions, I see the National Task Team met 7 times in 2011, but only once last year, and now again shortly, and we're ready in September. What are the reasons for the lack of the meetings? You know, 7 in 2011 and now 1 last year and only 1 now coming up in September. That's one question. The other one is the updated intervention plan. It's July 2013 to March 2014 provided a budget of a total of 3.87 million. What program does this come from within the Department of Justice, this budget, and was this a planned expenditure? Thanks, Chair.
I don't know whether I understood the presenter properly, but I think there's somewhere where she said progress made. I don't know which word to use, was very little, something like that. Now taking the time from which the task team was established in 2011, is that not so? Up to now, and they haven't seen any satisfactory progress in the amount of work that is being reported here. What could then be the problem? And if they have identified the problem, Chair, what mechanisms, what plans do they have to put in place in order to increase the result thereof? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Member. We have requested that you circulate a copy of the baseline research report, of which it did not circulate. Can you provide us with reasons why this this report is not there? The regional workshops budget is only 150,000 to cover areas, yet national Inviso budget is 250,000. If you can also explain to us the justification between the different amounts allocated. The updated intervention plan from July 2013 to March 2014 provides details of a budget of a total of 3.87 million. What programs does this come from in the department? Is this budget, was this planned for? This expenditure, what is planned for, or is just an expenditure that you've just occurred? I'm also worried because the presentation did not respond to the question related to the hate crime bill. The hate crime bill that will be detailed in that will be tabled in Parliament by 2014, and whether it will involve harsher sentences for crimes that are committed based on hate, or whether it will create a new substantive offense. Please, if you can just explain that to us as well. Briefly explain to us the hate crimes bill. Because as you delay, crime continues, you know. Innocent women are being killed on the street. So I'm not sure of the state of readiness as well, as to whether come 2014 this bill will be ready, will be able to roll out the program as said. And 2014 for me too, it sounds too far, but it will come. It's only next year.
Mm-hmm.
So 2014, when also, if you can just be specific, whether the beginning or the end. If it will still be within our term, so that we can be able to also engage further on this.
and if it's after our time, we should be able to do proper handovers, you know, to people who may take over from us, so that they can then continue and make sure that there's consistent in terms of this program. Thank you,
Chairperson. Thank you, Honourable Members. The first question relates to the 7 meetings that were held and progress, and why so little progress. And I think, you know, I paused when I referred to the meetings to say we do acknowledge that whilst little progress was made in terms of the deliverables one set oneself out to at this time the task team was established, there were a number of issues that the task team grappled with in those 7 meetings. And that indeed stalled the progress. A number of challenges had arisen in terms of the terms of reference of the task team, which needed clarity. I think also budgetary issues were a challenge in so far as when the minister had to establish the task team, it was something that the department had not envisaged at that time. It was not in the baseline. And so considerable amount of time at that moment had to be spent in looking for funding for the national task team, particularly the issues around traveling the CSOs up to Pretoria for these meetings. And the issue of representation was a major issue, composition and representation of civil society organizations in the task team. Role players were not unanimous in their views in respect of composition and task team, leading to some organizations withdrawing from the task team. Attendance of the departments was also an issue of the task team. And what I want to hasten to say that the DG has addressed this by looking at the capacity issues of the department, firstly in dealing with the LGBTI and transferring it to the newly established branch on constitutional development, providing it with more capacity. At that point in time, there was just one person dealing with it. There's now myself, the chief director. There's also the project manager who's present here. There's also the acting director who's present here. There's also another project manager who's been allocated so that we catch up with the time that we've lost. But even if there was little progress made, I must also say that a number of things were done as well by the department in terms of conducting the situation analysis that the task team had requested at that time. Also, a number of advocacy programs were conducted by the department. For example, presiding officers were trained on LGBTI issues. We don't refer to it here in the presentation because we confine ourselves to the questions, but just to allay your fears and to assure you that work did continue in so far as the department could deal with some of the issues. Justice Cameron was from the Constitutional Court, led some of those processes of training regional court magistrates on social context issues regarding LGBTI persons. The issue, I hope I've answered the Honourable Member. We can come back to it if you still require clarity, but to say to the Honourable Member that given that the DG has addressed the capacity, a number of initiatives have been put in place to address the resolutions that were taken at the 7 meetings. For example, they wanted the 7 meetings dealt with the issue of reviewing the terms of reference to SUSTAN. The issue of looking at the pending cases in the criminal justice system on violence against LGBTI persons. We are in the process of reviewing the cases that we have before us, provided to us by CSOs. NSAPS and the NPA are in the process of giving us feedback. In fact, there has been a breakthrough in one or two cases already in terms of perpetrators being rearrested, one in the Western Cape as well as in Gauteng. So we're actually seeing progress, and I'm pleased with that progress. Regarding the baseline report and why we've not released it yet, the baseline report, Chairperson, and the National Intervention Strategy go hand in hand. It's just that there was a bit of a lapse between when the baseline research was finalized and the National Intervention Strategy was being developed. We will submit it to you. We need to get the Minister's approval, which we are in the process of doing. And we would like to submit both documents to you, the situation analysis as well as the intervention strategy, because the strategy shows you how we intend addressing the gaps that have been highlighted in the situation analysis. Regarding the hate crimes bill, in all probability, the bill will be introduced after elections. But we are wanting to commence with the process of public participation. The bill will provide for special categories of hate crimes and distinct offences will be created under the hate crimes bill, and it will look at issues of sentencing. But not to say that our current legal framework does not provide for such things. I think that that is an important point to make, that currently the role played insofar as hate crimes is concerned relates to the aspect of sentencing. That is the only time that prosecutors are able to introduce the element of hate crime when we introduce it as aggravating factors to the offense. And courts have been very active in already making judgments on that. There are a number of cases, perhaps, especially there has been one on race, where the North Gauteng High Court has used race as a motive for the as an aggravating factor, and thereby imposing a harsher sentence on the offence. So I think that whilst we are waiting for the hate crime, together with common law, the fact that the Equality Act is in place and prohibits hate speech, there are ways that the judiciary and the prosecution can be very creative in dealing with the offences. And whilst there may be a number of cases relating to race-based hate, it does show the way in terms of how other discriminatory factors can be used by the judiciary and the courts to advance the cause on hate crimes. In respect of the budgets, the 3.8 million is from the baseline budget that was set aside for the communication strategy, which we are now in the process of finalizing. In respect of why the amounts differ in the action plan, in the draft action plan, these are just honourable members, estimated amounts that we put together as civil society and departments in the working group meetings, and we're going to be taking it next week to the National Committee, so they may change. It's just estimated for now. We just wanted to ring fence amounts to give members an idea of what we're looking at. Thank you, Chairperson. I hope I've answered all the questions.
Except for the report that you said, you still have to wait for the minister's approval. Would you want that? Maybe if you can give us time frames, if there are any.
Chairperson, by end of October, we will submit to you.
End of October. Honorable.
Yes, Chair. Just something else. You know, we struggle with this committee just to get, like, the Domestic Violence Act years down the track. Now, I'm going to read something to you here, and I've got to get used to all these acronyms, this LGBTI, for argument's sake. In cases of collective rape, I'm reading something here, the base offense rape would still need to be proven before hate crime charges could be tried. The conviction rate for rape is already low. Now, the conviction rate for rape for 2011-2012, there were 64,514 cases of rape reported. The conviction rate was 4,501, as low as that. What makes you think this is going to make such a big difference to these already low figures by just using the base effect, hate charges? What hate crime situation? How do you think this can influence matters? Thank you.
That's a difficult question, and I think that's precisely the issues we're grappling with, and we've grappled with in the policy framework, but that should not be, success rate should not be a deterrent from looking at additional protective mechanisms. I think we've got to be positive. I know the statistics are low in terms of convictions, but I think that with the establishment of the sexual offences, re-establishment of the sexual offences courts, the emphasis on the multidisciplinary training, the enhancement of investigative skills, I think we've got to be positive that we must reach our targets that we set ourselves to. The hate crimes, it's an ugly crime, frankly speaking, given our history. I think that it's intolerable that a person would be persecuted on the basis of one's identity, whether it be race, gender, sexual orientation. I think it's sad, and we have to send a strong signal to society that it's not tolerated. Especially when you look at the deaths of black lesbian women. It's sad because there's intersectionality of a number of factors. It's race, class, gender, sexual orientation. So I hear you, and I think that is something we must look at in terms as we go forward in the policy dialogues in the provinces. But I'm confident that with the minister's announcement on the re-establishment of the sexual offences court, we'd see the conviction rates going up. And certainly, you can never underestimate the issue of training, public education, investigations, prosecution, etc. Thanks.
Yeah, Chair, mine is not it's not a question, it's just a comment. I think there are a number of things that should be really taken seriously and looked at as to whether they do happen. I'm sorry. These types of reports that we get here, you know, they are so blowing, they are so, when you sit here, you get the sense that something is being done. But when you go down, it's a complete different story. Chair, you know very well, 2 months back, we were in KZN, the whole, is it 2 months ago? Yeah, something like that. The whole NCOP. Let me say, these reports to me, they reflect reports that someone sits in the office and starts to write this report. Like the lady here seems to be quite knowledgeable of coming for, you know, developing such type of material. I was saying 2 months back, we were in things that there were a number of
stakeholders who came to give reports. Most of them were dead. You remember them. But there was one of Department of Agriculture. Is that not the one? Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Which was so glowing, you know, creating a picture in your mind that people in KZN are really on the path of changing their lives. And the following day, after the report was given, the following day, we went into the field. We saw complete different picture than what we were told yesterday. And this matter was taken up. I'm sure the NCOP must have done something about it because it was really noted with vigor. Now this report, it contradicts itself. If you read what the report says, to me it gives me an idea that quite a lot of effort has been made, you know, to try to address these things. But the report somewhere it says there's been little progress. Where you do effort, where you actually go out of your way to try and address an existing situation, you must get good results. I don't know then what will you be doing if you can't get any progressive results. But the report itself, as I say, it contradicts itself. There has been very little progress. That is why I'm saying the lady here seems to be quite knowledgeable of sitting in an office writing these things. They say, no, I'm going to Parliament, I'm going to report, without having been to the field, without having checked the implementation. We pass laws here, Chair. We pass laws here. We pass the budget to go to this department for implementation. Our duty is to see to it that those projects, those legal systems that are in place are implemented. But if you get the very same department to tell you that progress has been very little, like Honorable Webb, comparing the case, the number of cases and the number of convictions, there's a big gap there. So, Chair, now, it really paralyzes my mind. I sort of even fail to think, what can I ask?
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Mokoro. I hear your concern. You said the minister will be able to respond on the when? October?
Yes, at the end of October.
Okay. October, after October comes November. We'll still have time. Okay. All right, we will communicate to yourselves as to whether you can just send the report or we want a revised report that you must come and present before us. We're not happy about the presentation, though. Okay. All right. Okay.
Yes, I just want to respond to say that I think when we speak of the progress and the little progress, it's in relation to the fact that that happened in the past. We want to be honest. To say that, yes, the minister established the task team in 2011. There were challenges. That's why there was little progress. But to date, this is what the minister has done. And we've been addressing the institutional aspects into getting the task team working. And so far as what is happening on the ground, we were in Tokoza the other day. When the Duduzile was murdered in Tokoza, we went there immediately. We went to the police station. We went to the family. We spoke to the community. And we ensured that the responses we develop must talk to the issues on the ground. We assure you, Honourable Member, that we try our best to do that. it's important. Otherwise, legislation and policy would be useless if it's not going to talk to the issues on the ground. And if we take your words very seriously and we'll ensure that it doesn't become a desktop written document, but that we give life to the plans that we are developing. And we promise to report back to the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That brings us to the end of our meeting. Only members can remain. And we should just decide what to do with next minute. Thanks.
Okay. 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 Okay.